I've mentioned my grandmother, my maternal grandmother before. She was larger than life. When I was growing up, if I'd go to her with some sort of anxiety or emotion that I was feeling or that was troubling me, she would say, get over it. But if you put her in front of the TV with the New England Patriots playing, she would be screaming and shouting. If you pulled out a board game, she would fight to the bitter end to defeat a seven-year-old. Her name was Hester, but one Sunday evening she was leaving a Patriots game, and someone shouted at her across the parking lot, "Great game, Tiger!" And she thought, "I like that." So she called her family the next day and said, "From henceforth, I shall be known as Tiger." And she was. When I was in high school, Tiger got sick. She slipped on ice while out in Oregon and broke her hip. And then she was diagnosed with cancer, and there was a pretty quick decline. Knowing that she was probably nearing the end, our whole family flew up to Boston to spend a few days with her. And then I flew back to Jacksonville, and a few days later, my mother called me to tell me that Tiger had died. I almost couldn't process the words. Death didn't seem possible for her. I was asked to say something at her funeral, but every time I tried to think of what I would say or write down a few words, I got stumped. I couldn't find a way to capture who she was or what she meant to me. And the more I tried, the more I struggled. I flew up to Boston, and the day before the service, I went for a walk with no particular destination in mind. I remember walking by this little Italian restaurant that Tiger and I had eaten at so many times. I walked by the pharmacy where we would go together, and then when she wasn't in such good shape, where she would send me in her stead to pick up her medicine. I eventually found myself at the Old North Church in Boston, the church that's famed for being where Paul Revere hung the lanterns in the Revolutionary War. I walked into this church that Tiger had worshipped at for decades, and I found the exact pew and the exact place where she had sat Sunday after Sunday, year after year, decade after decade, and worshipped. And there, alone, I cried and I prayed. I thanked God for the time I'd had with Tiger. And then in a way that I to this day can't fully explain, I suddenly experienced a profound peace and calm. The fear, the uncertainty, the pain sort of evaporated. I knew that Tiger was at peace. She hadn't slipped beyond this life into nothingness, but I knew she was in a life that was more full, more joyful, more complete than anything she'd experienced. I knew that Tiger was in heaven. I think the question that most of us, probably all of us, face at some point or another is, what happens when we die? What happens to the people we love who have died? Shakespeare called the place beyond death the great undiscovered country. And in today's gospel, Jesus tells us about heaven, the great undiscovered country. But he doesn't give us definitions. He instead tells us five stories, five parables. The kingdom of heaven, he says, is like a mustard seed, a lump of dough, treasure buried in a field, a pearl of great value, and then a net cast into the sea. And then after saying this, Jesus looked at his disciples and says, "Have you understood all this?" And they say, probably a little too quickly, yes, yes. I'm not sure they really did, but I think we do the same thing the disciples did. We assume we already know what heaven is or what it's like. We have a picture in our minds, don't we? Maybe it even sounds cartoonish of clouds and harps and pearly gates and golden streets. And it's somewhere up there, and we'll see it sometime out in the future. But the five pictures that Jesus gives us of heaven come without a single puffy cloud, a single golden gate, a single pearly gate or golden street. Instead, these images, these stories reveal six truths, six keys that I want to talk about this morning that relate to heaven. And the six keys, if you spell them out, spell H-E-A-V-E-N, heaven. The first H that I want to talk about, H is for here. Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like yeast. And in the Koine Greek, he says, it's sort of hidden in the flour. It's mixed into the flour. The yeast disappears into the dough, but it is alive and it is at work immediately. Even before we can begin to see the dough rise, the yeast is doing something. It's growing right here, right now. And that's Jesus' point. I think we expect that heaven's somewhere up there, heaven's at some point in the future, but Jesus is saying, no, no, heaven is here. Heaven is now. Like the yeast, heaven is kneaded into this ordinary life and quietly transforming the world around us and transforming us from within. And this means you don't have to simply wait for heaven at some point in the future. You can glimpse it now. You can taste it now in an act of mercy, in a person healed from life's abuses, in a moment of selfless love or profound forgiveness. Whenever we gather at this altar rail and receive the consecrated bread and the wine, we say that we're receiving a foretaste of the heavenly banquet, the feast in the kingdom of heaven. Heaven is close. It's so close. So the first H, heaven is here. The first E in heaven is for edges. Heaven begins at the edges. Jesus compares heaven to a mustard seed. Now, every farmer listening to Jesus' story would have smirked at this parable, because in the ancient world, the mustard shrub wasn't a crop, it was really a weed. It would start in a farmer's field and it would eventually take over. When the prophets who'd come before Jesus wanted to describe a great kingdom, they would talk about it as a towering cedar, a great and mighty tree that had birds in its branches. But Jesus says that heaven isn't like a great and mighty and majestic cedar. Heaven instead is like a weed. In other words, Jesus is saying, don't expect to see God breaking into the world primarily in the places of majesty and might and influence and power. Instead, Jesus is saying, look to the edges. You'll begin to glimpse the kingdom of heaven breaking into the world where an abandoned parking lot is filled with people who don't have a place to sleep but are being fed nonetheless. You will see the kingdom of heaven not at the fancy steak restaurants downtown, but at St. Mary's food pantry, where people are given food and treated with dignity and respect. The kingdom of heaven takes root where generosity lives and where love is shared and where selfless service is embodied. And like any weed, the kingdom of heaven will start on the edges, but it will grow until it takes over the whole field. The second key to understanding the kingdom of heaven is edges. The A in heaven is for all in, heaven demands everything, which can sound awfully challenging to careful or methodical or dutiful people. We're taught to diversify, to keep our options open, to protect what we have, but that's not the way of the kingdom of heaven. Jesus turned this idea upside down in the parables about the two men and the treasures they discovered. The first, a laborer, finds treasure hidden in the field. The second, a merchant, finds a pearl unlike any he has ever seen before. And notice what both men do. They sell not a little, but not most of what they have. They sell everything. Matthew says it twice as he records Jesus' parables, and that's probably because he doesn't want us to miss it. He says that Jesus explained, he sold all that he had, and later, he sold all that he had, everything, no hedge, no reserve, no backup plan. The kingdom of heaven is one thing where we're called to not be halfway in. Heaven asks or demands all of us, everything we have. But the truth is, when we've found something this incredible, going all in isn't a sacrifice. The real tragedy would be to hold something back. The V in heaven is for variety. There are a variety of ways that people come to find heaven. Jesus' parables about these two men and their treasures begin very differently. The first man is not searching for treasure. He is just doing his job, probably working in someone else's field when he, you know, stumbles over this treasure and it changes his life. He gives everything in order to get this field. And I've known people who've sort of stumbled into a relationship with God. Years ago when I was in college, a young man walked into the little Episcopal church that I was attending at the time. He'd been out all night. He hadn't even been home yet. I later discovered as we became friends that he wandered into that church that Sunday morning seeking primarily air conditioning on his walk home. But in that back pew, he met God, and that morning his life began to change. Jesus tells a second parable about a man who has spent his whole life, year after year, decade after decade, his whole life searching, looking, seeking the perfect pearl, and one day he finds it, and he trades everything he has to have it. In other words, some people find God unexpectedly. Others search for year after year, seeking and asking questions and struggling with doubts and reading until one day they finally encounter, they finally have a relationship with God. But both of these two parables Jesus tells end the same way. They end with great joy. Here's the fourth key. It doesn't matter which one of these you are, whether you stumbled into a relationship with God or whether you searched for 40 years, there are a variety of ways to find God, but the door is the same door and the joy is the same joy. The second E in heaven is for exceeds. Heaven exceeds our every expectation. The laborer in the field didn't expect to find treasure. The merchant had seen many beautiful pearls before, but in each case, what they discovered surpassed their wildest dreams. They found something whose value could not be measured. And heaven is like that. Heaven exceeds everything we could imagine or dream. Heaven is not simply an improved version of this life. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard even a funeral sermon where someone will say, you know, heaven is like the great 18th hole or like the great fishing hole. Now, as an aside, to me, millennia of fishing or golfing sounds like hell more than heaven. But the point is, heaven is beyond what we could even imagine. Heaven exceeds anything we've ever seen or experienced. Whatever beauty you've known, or whatever joy has ever taken your breath away, or whatever love has filled your heart, those are only hints, signposts, foretastes, pointing us towards what heaven will really be like in its culmination. Paul wrote about this when he said, "No eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor has the human heart imagined what God has prepared for those who love him." So the fifth key is this. We come hoping that heaven will be good, but it's better than good. Heaven exceeds all of our expectations. And finally, the N in heaven is for not yet. Yes, the kingdom of heaven is here, but it's not yet complete. In our reading today, Jesus ends with this image of a net thrown into the sea, gathering fish of every kind. And Jesus says, so it will be at the end of the age. The kingdom of heaven is already here, but it's not finished. There is a day coming at the end of the age when things will finally become as they were always meant to be, where every wrong will be made right and every tear will be wiped away and every wound will be healed. Yes, the victory has already been won 2,000 years ago on that cross where love and good defeated darkness and evil and death. However, we look forward to the day when we will fully see God's love triumph. This is the sixth key. Not yet. So what have these parables taught us about heaven? Heaven is here, already at work, kneaded into our ordinary lives. Heaven begins at the edges. It starts around the margins, among the overlooked and the forgotten. But like a weed, it will take over the whole field. Heaven calls us to be all in. Not to hedge our bets, but to push all of our chips to the center of the table. Heaven can be found in a variety of ways. You can stumble upon it or search for years, but the door is the same and the door is always open to you. Heaven exceeds our greatest hopes. It is worth more than we could ever ask or imagine. And heaven is not yet. It is here and it is still to come, to be made whole at the end of the age. Jesus asked his disciples, "Have you understood all this?" Their answer was yes, but I doubt they really did understand everything. Frankly, I don't understand everything, and I doubt you do either. But understanding everything isn't the point. We don't have to understand the yeast in order for the bread to rise. We don't have to understand every mystery of heaven for the kingdom to begin quietly transforming our lives and our community. God is already at work. The kingdom of heaven is expanding. And my prayer for us this week is that we will glimpse the kingdom of heaven growing around us, that we will see it in ordinary places, that we will look for it at the margins, at the edges, and that when we do glimpse the kingdom of heaven, we will join in the work of sharing God's love, knowing that ultimately heaven will exceed anything we could ever ask or imagine. Amen.